Beauty. Examination in the garden. It was not one man who entered the garden, but a group of three. Yet two stood back in deference to one who advanced alone and slowly. In the tense silence, Beauty saw his feet and the hem of his robe as he moved about the circle. Richer fabric and velvet slippers with high upturned curling toes, each decorated by a dangling ruby. He moved with slow steps, as if he was surveying everything carefully. Beauty held her breath as he approached her. She squinted slightly as the toe of the wine-coloured slipper touched her cheek, and then rested upon the back of her neck, then followed the line of her spine to its tip. She shivered, unable to help herself, her moan sounding loud and impertinent to her own ears. But there was no reprimand. She thought she heard a little laugh, and then a sentence, spoken gently, made the tears spring to her eyes again. How soothing was the voice, how unusually musical. Maybe the unintelligible language made it seem more lyrical, yet she longed to understand the words spoken. Of course, she had not been addressed. The words had been spoken to one of the other two men, yet the voice stirred her, almost seduced her. Quite suddenly, she felt the chains pulled hard. Her nipples stiffened with a tingling that sent its tentacles down into her groin instantly. She knelt up, unsure, frightened, and then was pulled to her feet, nipples burning, her face flaming. For one moment, the immensity of the garden impressed her. The bound slaves, the lavish blooms, the blue sky above shockingly clear, the large assemblage of the grooms watching her, and then the man standing before her. What must she do with her hands? She put them behind her neck and stood staring at the tiled floor with only the vaguest picture of the master who faced her. He was much taller than the little boys. In fact, he was a slender giant of a man, elegantly proportioned, and he seemed older by virtue of his air of command. And it was he who had pulled the chains himself and still held the handles. Quite suddenly, he passed them from his right hand to his left, and with the right hand, he slapped the undersides of Beauty's breasts, startling her. She bit down on her cry, but the warm yielding of her body surprised her. She throbbed with a desire to be touched, slapped again, for an even more annihilating violence. And in the moment of trying to collect her wits, she had glimpsed the man's dark, wavy hair, not quite shoulder length, and his eyes, so black they seemed drawn in ink, with large shining beads of jet for the irises. How gorgeous these desert people can be, she thought. And her dreams in the hold of the ship suddenly rose to mock her. Love him? Love this one who is but a servant, like the others? Yet the face burned through her fear and agitation. It seemed an impossible face suddenly. It was almost innocent. The ringing slaps came again, and she stepped back before she could stop herself. Her breasts were flooded with warmth. At once, her little groom thrashed her disobedient legs with the thong. She steadied herself, sorry for the failure. The voice spoke again, and it was as light as before, as melodious and almost caressing, but it sent the little grooms into a flurry of activity. She felt soft, silken fingers on her ankles and on her wrists, and before she realized what was happening, she was lifted, her legs raised at right angles to her body and spread wide by the grooms who held her, her arms forced straight up in the air, her back and head supported firmly. She shivered spasmodically, her thighs aching, her sex brutally exposed. And then she felt another pair of hands lift her head, and she peered right into the eyes of the mysterious giant of a master, who smiled at her radiantly. Oh, too handsome he was! Instantly, she looked away, her lids fluttering. His eyes were tilted upwards at the outsides, which gave him a slightly devilish look, and his mouth was large and extremely kissable. But for all the innocence of the expression, a ferocious spirit seemed to emanate from him. She sensed menace in him. She could feel it in his touch, and with her legs held wide apart as they were, she passed into a silent panic. As if to confirm his power, the master quickly slapped her face, causing her to whimper before she could stop herself. The hand rose again, this time slapping her right cheek, and then the left again, until she was suddenly crying audibly. "But what have I done?" she thought, and through a mist of tears she saw only curiosity in his face. He was studying her. It wasn't innocence. She had judged wrongly. It was merely fascination with what he was doing that flamed in him. "So it's a test," she tried to tell herself. "But how do I pass or fail?" And shuddering, she saw the hands rising again. He tilted her head back and opened her mouth, touching her tongue and her teeth. Chills passed over her. She felt her whole body convulse in the hands of the grooms. The probing fingers touched her eyelids, her eyebrows. They wiped at her tears, which were spilling down her face as she stared at the blue sky above her. And then she felt the hand at her exposed sex. The thumbs went into her vagina, and she was pulled impossibly wide as her hips rocked forward, shaming her. It seemed she would burst with orgasm, that she couldn't contain it. But was this forbidden? And how would she be punished? She tossed her head from side to side, struggling to command herself. But the fingers were so gentle, so soft, yet firm as they opened her. If they touched her clitoris, she would be lost, incapable of restraint. But mercifully, they let her go, tugging at her pubic hair and only pinching her lips together quickly. In a day she bowed her head, the sight of her nakedness thoroughly unnerving her. She saw the new master turn and snap his fingers, and through the tangle of her hair she saw Eleanor hoisted instantly by the grooms, just as she had been. Eleanor struggled for composure, her pink sex wet and gaping through its wreath of brown hair, the long, delicate muscles of her thighs twitching. Beauty watched in terror as the master proceeded with the same examination. Eleanor's high, sharply angled breasts heaved as the master played with her mouth, her teeth. But when the slaps came, Eleanor was utterly silent, and the look on the master's face further confused Beauty. How passionately interested he seemed, how intent upon what he was doing. Not even the cruel master of postulance at the castle had seemed so dedicated as this one, and his charm was considerable. The rich velvet robe was well tailored to his straight back and shoulders. His hands had a beguiling grace of movement as he spread Eleanor's red pubic mouth, and the poor princess pumped her hips disgracefully. At the sight of Eleanor's sex growing full and wet, and obviously hungry, Beauty's long starvation at sea made her feel desperate. And when the master smiled and smoothed Eleanor's long hair back from her forehead, examining her eyes, Beauty felt raging jealousy. No, it would be ghastly to love any of them, she thought. She couldn't give her heart. She tried not to look any more. Her own legs throbbed, the grooms holding them back as firmly as ever, and her own sex swelled unbearably. But there were more spectacles for her. The master came back to Tristan, and now he was lifted into the air, and his legs spread wide in the same manner. Out of the corner of her eye, Beauty saw that the little grooms struggled under Tristan's weight, and Tristan's beautiful face was crimson with humiliation as his hard and thrusting organ was examined closely by the master. The master's fingers played with the foreskin, played with the shiny tip, squeezing out of it a single drop of glistening moisture. Beauty could feel the tension in Tristan's limbs, but she dared not look up to see his face again as the master reached to examine it. In a blur she saw the master's face, saw the enormous ink-black eyes, and the hair swept back over the ear to reveal a tiny gold ring stabbing the earlobe. She heard him slapping Tristan, and she closed her eyes tight as Tristan finally moaned, the slaps seeming to resound through the garden. When she opened her eyes again, it was because the master had laughed softly to himself as he passed in front of her. and she saw his hand rise almost absently to squeeze her left breast lightly. The tears sprang to her eyes, her mind struggling to understand the outcome of his examinations, to push away the fact that he drew her more than any being who had hitherto claimed her. Now, to her right and slightly in front of her, it was Laurent who must be raised up for the master's scrutiny. And, as the enormous prince was lifted, she heard the master make some quick verbal outburst, which brought laughter from all the other grooms immediately. No one needed to translate it for her. Laurent was too powerfully built, his organ was too splendid. And she could see now that it was fully erect, well trained as it was, and the sight of the heavily muscled thighs spread wide apart brought back to her delirious memories of the punishment cross. She tried not to look at the enormous scrotum, but she could not help herself. And it seemed that the master had been moved by these superior endowments to a new excitement. He smacked Laurent hard with the back of his hand several times in amazingly rapid succession. The enormous torso writhed, the groom struggling to keep it still. And then the master removed the clamps, letting them drop to the ground, and pressed both of Laurent's nipples as Laurent moaned loudly. But something else was happening. Beauty saw it. Laurent had looked at the master directly. He had done it more than once. Their eyes had met. And now, as his nipples were squeezed again, very hard it seemed, the prince stared right at the master. "No, Laurent," she thought desperately. "Don't tempt them. It won't be the glory of the punishment cross here. It will be those corridors and miserable oblivion." Yet, it absolutely fascinated her that Laurent was so bold. The master went round him, and the grooms who held him, and now he took the leather thong from one of the others and spanked Laurent's nipples over and over again. Laurent couldn't keep quiet, though he had turned his head away. His neck was corded with tension, his limbs trembling. And the master seemed as curious, as fastened upon his test as ever. He made a gesture to one of the others, and as Beauty watched, a long, gilded leather glove was brought to the master. It was beautifully worked, with intricate designs, all the way down the leather length of the arm to the large cuff, the whole gleaming as if it had been covered in a salve or unguent. As the master drew the glove over his hand and down his arm to the elbow, Beauty felt herself flooded with heat and excitement. The master's eyes were almost childlike in their studiousness, the mouth irresistible as it smiled, the grace of the body as he approached Laurent now entrancing. He moved his left hand to the back of Laurent's head, cradling it, his fingers curled in Laurent's hair as the prince stared straight upward. And with the gloved hand, the right hand, he pushed upward slowly between Laurent's open legs, two fingers entering his body first, as Beauty stared unabashedly. Laurent's breathing grew hoarse, rapid. His face darkened. The fingers had disappeared inside his anus, and now it seemed the whole hand worked its way into him. The grooms moved in a little on all sides, and Beauty could see that Tristan and Eleanor watched with equal attention. The master, meanwhile, seemed to see nothing but Laurent. He was staring straight at Laurent's face, and Laurent's face was twisted in pleasure and pain as the hand moved its way deeper and deeper into his body. It was in beyond the wrist, and Laurent's limbs were no longer shuddering. They were frozen. A long, whistling sigh passed through his teeth. The master lifted Laurent's chin with the thumb of his left hand. He bent over until his face was very close to Laurent's, and in a long, tense silence, the arm moved ever upward into Laurent as the prince seemed to swoon, his cock stiff and still, the clear moisture leaking from it in the tiniest droplets. Beauty's whole body tightened, relaxed, and again she felt herself on the verge of orgasm. As she tried to drive it back, she felt herself grow limp and weak, and all the hands holding her were in fact making love to her, caressing her. The master brought his right arm forward without withdrawing it from Laurent, and in so doing he tilted the prince's pelvis upward, further revealing the enormous balls and the glistening gold leather as it widened the pink ring of the anus impossibly. A sudden cry came out of Laurent, a hoarse gasp that seemed a cry for mercy, and the master held him motionless, their lips nearly touching. The master's left hand released Laurent's head and moved over his face, parting his lips with one finger, and then the tears spilled from Laurent's eyes. And very quickly the master withdrew his arm and peeled off the glove, casting it aside as Laurent hung in the grasp of the groom's, his head down, his face reddened. The master made some little remark, and again the grooms laughed agreeably. One of the grooms replaced the nipple clamps, and Laurent grimaced. The master immediately gestured for Laurent to be placed on the floor, and the chains of Laurent's leashes were suddenly fixed to a gold ring on the back of the master's slipper. "Oh, no, this beast can't take him away from us," Beauty thought. But that was the mere surface of her thoughts. She was terrified that it was Laurent, and Laurent alone, who had been chosen by the master. But they were all being put down, and suddenly Beauty was on hands and knees, neck pressed low by the soft, velvety sole of the slipper, and she realized that Tristan and Eleanor were beside her, and all three of them were being pulled forward by their nipple chains and whipped by the thongs as they moved out of the garden. She saw the hem of the master's robe to her right, and behind him the figure of Laurent struggling to keep up with the master's strides, the chains from his nipples anchoring him to the master's foot, his brown hair veiling his face mercifully. Where were Dimitri and Rosalind? Why had they been discarded? Would one of the other men who had come in with the master take them? She couldn't know, and the corridor seemed endless. But she didn't really care about Dimitri and Rosalind. All she cared about truly was that she and Tristan and Laurent and Eleanor were together. And, of course, the fact that he, this mysterious master, this tall and impossibly elegant creature, was moving right alongside of her. His embroidered robe brushed her shoulder as he moved ahead, Laurent struggling to keep pace with him. The thongs licked at her backside, licked at her pubis, as she rushed after them. At last, they came to another pair of doors, and the thongs drove them through into a large, lamp-lighted chamber. She was bid to stop by the firm pressure of a slipper on her neck once more, and then she realized that all the grooms had withdrawn and the door had been shut behind them. The only sound was the anxious breathing of the princes and princesses. The master moved past Beauty to the door. A bolt was thrown, a key turned. Silence. Then she heard the melodious voice again, soft and low, and this time it was speaking in charmingly accented syllables, her own language. "Well, my darlings, you may all come forward and kneel up before me. I have much to say to you."